Hi there, welcome to another edition of the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour from True Confessions magazine called Getting to Know You. Here's the story. I screamed to the top of my lungs at David Toffer, the organizer of my company's training seminar for the year. No, I won't do it. It's not about what you want, Rena. David rebutted, slowly but steadily losing his patience. There are seven other employees here who are involved in this. The nine people seated around the conference table were quiet until my outburst. Then they lashed into me and let me have it. They all agreed with David and were willing to go along with his proposal. I wasn't, and I refused to go out that way. I was going to say my piece, even if it killed me. That's not my problem, I whined. I would rather attend a conference in Antigua than go along with what you're proposing. We do the resort thing every year, and it's high time that we do something different, something more meaningful. Why now? What about sticking with the tried and true? In the wake of all the senseless violence and miscommunication between the races that ushered in our new century, I think we need to increase our awareness of multicultural diversity. We've all seen the changes with this company. Tolerance and cultural understanding are lessons we all should learn. They're lessons that will serve us well in the new millennium. My co-workers applauded David's speech. He had a captive audience at that point, so captive that they reminded me of blacks I saw in a film. They were Sunday morning parishioners who answered their fire and brimstone preaching ministers in call and response style when good points were made. What do you have to say, Rena, since you're our one dissenting opinion? I knew when I was licked, but I still refused to go out without a fight. Tell us your proposal in detail. The theme of this year's training seminar is promoting multicultural diversity in the new millennium. David elaborated, it will be 5 days long. The first 2 days will consist of classes, presentations, and workshops. That sounds wonderful, Dave. Sharon, one of Dave's best henchwomen, exclaimed, that's an excellent learning experience. All the remaining co-workers agreed with her. I still wasn't totally convinced, though. How could navigating the wild and woolly New York City streets compare with basking and baking in the scorching Antigua sun? What's this about a field trip? I asked. I put together a list of 15 cultural diverse items that you all have to find. We'll go to an area in Brooklyn called Flatbushes and Bedford-Stuyvesant, and each of you will set out to find those items in the two neighborhoods. The person who finds all of them will win something special. You're proposing that we go to some ghetto for a scavenger hunt? I complained. Are you crazy? Rena, shut up, Sharon said. I've had just about enough of you for one day. The other team members echoed David's sentiments by yelling and screaming at me as well. I have every right to express my opinion, and that's exactly what I'm doing, I shouted back. Everyone, please, this is not getting us anywhere. You'll be safe in Brooklyn, I assure you, David told us. The items I'm asking you to find are readily available there. How will we know where to get these things you'll tell us to find? I asked. That's totally up to you. You'll each be given a list and a map of the area. What is the prize? As I said before, it's a surprise, but I will say that a camera, tanning lotion, and a bathing suit will come in handy. David made it sound as if some sort of trip was the prize. I didn't care what I had to do. I would win that trip. Let's put this to a vote, because we wouldn't want any complaints or trouble later, David suggested. Everyone agreed. A motion was made and seconded. Sharon passed out small pieces of paper and pencils so we could record our votes. 8 people voted yes, 1 no, and there was 1 abstention. The motion carried. That following week, we would begin our training seminar and travel to that Big Apple, which I knew was rotten to its very core, or so it was said on all of our local news shows. I didn't know a whole lot about what people of color were like, but I suppose that I was ready to learn. My town consisted of second and third generation German, Norwegian, and Swedish people, with an occasional WASP thrown in to make things interesting. I was born and raised on a farm in a small Midwestern town. My family raised dairy cows, and we made our money from selling milk, cheese, butter from them, and the eggs from our lone chicken and rooster. Eventually, Papa planted some corn and vegetable crops. There were enough of us to work our farm. I had 3 big brothers, 1 little sister, and my parents. They taught us from an early age that hard work wouldn't kill us, but would help build character. They raised me in a strict Christian home that was right in the middle of the Bible Belt. After a while, Papa began to tire easily the older he got, so Mama told us that she was going to hire some fit young men to help out and take the load off him. Mama put an ad in the paper and was shocked at how many responses she received. She interviewed many people. She asked me to check their records. Everyone liked them, so they were paid a small salary and given room and board to work for us. Their school gave them special assignments to complete so they could keep up, and their working on our farm was turned into an extra credit internship. Everyone was happy. I'm almost embarrassed to say that I'd never seen Black and Mexican people before Paul, Philip, and Eduardo came to work for us. I didn't know what they were like. I would have hated them because they were portrayed as violent, cheating people who stole. My parents, however, were careful enough to make sure we understood differently. Still, I needed to see them for myself. The 3 of them worked out just fine. I found that they were no different from us. They did the same things we did and were good people who enjoyed their work. Paul and Philip would go into town to buy whatever was available to make their traditional dinners, and when they got back to the farm, they would cook up a scrumptious feast. They prepared a wonderful Sunday dinner. For dessert, they wowed us with sweet potato pie. We were all stuffed. Philip explained that movie depicted the camaraderie and sharing that happened in many Black households during Sunday dinner. Paul added that having such a large meal and plenty of people to share it with was not unusual. He told us that holidays just meant the same thing being done on a larger scale. We all laughed and cried during the movie, and the experience seemed to bring us all closer. Eduardo wasn't going to be outdone by his 2 friends, however, so he made us a Mexican meal of chicken mole poblano, refried beans and rice, and tortillas with flan for dessert for flan. His meal was excellent. We had a ball, and I felt lucky to know 3 great people like Paul, Philip, and Eduardo. It was time for them to return to college at the end of the season, and we had fallen in love with them by that time. We didn't want them to leave. Papa told them they could continue to live with us, and they could eat with us if they wanted. They agreed, so we didn't have to lose them. Papa told me to do whatever I needed to keep them, even on a reduced time schedule. The farm was running better than ever because of their hard work. I only had a high school diploma, but I was determined to find a job anyway. I wasn't going to let not having a college degree stop me. I prepared a resume and responded to want ads. I went to the city and pounded the pavement in quest for a job. I went on numerous interviews, and finally, I was hired by a large food manufacturing company. I became an administrative assistant in the nutrition department. My duties were assisting the two head nutritionists with whatever needed doing. I was promoted to an assistant nutritionist, and the company offered to pay my tuition to attend college at night. I loved my job because every day was like a new adventure. I often read through the surveys to see what kinds of food products people wanted in frozen form, and I reported back to my bosses. So one day I made up my mind to talk to my supervisor. I went to her door and stood outside for a moment. I heard her moving around, so I knew that she wasn't too engrossed in something that she couldn't give me some of her time. I knocked and she told me to come in. "Janet, I have to speak to you about something." "Sure, Rena," she said, straightening the pile of papers. "You know you can talk to me about anything, right?" "Thanks. I noticed that you give me all sorts of duties except traveling around the country for taste testing and collecting recipes and cookbooks. Why is that?"
"You'll get there in time, Rena, but I don't feel that you're ready for that right now."
"What do you mean, not ready?"
"I mean that you're a great worker, but I find you quite limited."
"Limited? How?"
"Well, your worldview doesn't extend beyond our state. You haven't traveled to other places." "I think to throw you into those duties too soon wouldn't be a wise thing to do. If I'm not given the opportunity to experience these things, how will I learn? I'm afraid that if I were to send you into such situations, you'd do poorly because of ignorance. The not knowing, I mean."
"How would I do poorly, Janet?"
"Let's see," she began. "If I was to send you to New York City and tell you to get a recipe for and a sample of Rellenos de Papas, what would you do?"
That's exactly my point. You don't have a clue."
"No, I've never heard them before." Janet explained that these were meat-stuffed potato balls. They could only be found in communities with large Puerto Rican populations.
"Well, I know about Black and Mexican cultures," I offered.
"Because you have Black and Mexican workers at your farm?" she inquired, remembering that I told her about the three students. "I'm sorry to burst your bubble, Rena, but eating a few meals they prepared and listening to their slang is not enough." Janet gave me a lecture on how to learn about cultures.
"It seems like you can find out a lot about a culture through its food," I agreed.
"You certainly can, and it's way more interesting than just looking at a movie. You'll get to travel on those trips, Rena, but it'll take a while before you're ready. I'll work with you."
"How will you work with me?"
"I have a plan that will heighten your awareness about multicultural diversity." That was the beginning of my hatred for David Toffer. As far as I was concerned, he was too cocky and arrogant for his own good. David had traveled to many places for our company, but I felt that it was time for me to take his place. He'd seen enough. I wanted to travel so badly I could taste it. I was as green as they came and didn't know much about farming.
I didn't hate people of other cultures, but I went out of my way to stay away from them. They frightened me before the guys came to work for us, but I didn't know why. It was time for me to expand my horizons. Every year, our company had a training seminar. The subject was always different, but it was held at a Caribbean resort so that we could mix business with pleasure. This year, though, the company wanted to do something different. They claimed that they wanted to do their part to help promote goodwill in the new millennium. They felt that our ignorance was their fault, so they aimed to change it. I wasn't happy that we'd have to go to New York instead of an all-experience-paid tropical resort, but I didn't have any choice. After we attended training at the company, David passed out information kits to everyone and called a special meeting. He answered all of our questions and told us what time to meet at work the next day. He explained that the company decided not to fly us to New York, but to charter a bus. They felt that if we were to develop a sense of cultural awareness, it should begin at our company. Everyone but me was looking forward to the experience. I tossed and turned all night, thinking about being forced to ride a bus with my coworkers to New York. It seemed as if, as soon as I fell asleep, my alarm clock woke me up. I'd packed right before I went to bed, so all I had to do was throw on some jeans and leave. When I arrived at work, the group was assembled and ready. I just wanted to get the whole trip and seminar over with so I could put it behind me. David had food loaded onto the bus, and we followed him inside and found seats. We also found two new faces in the group, Harriet, a writer, and Lloyd, a reporter. David told us they were accompanying us because they liked what our food plant was doing and wanted to write about it. "Why do they have to come?" I whined. "Their presence will only turn this whole thing into a media circus." "Not to worry, Rena," David said. "They're both old friends of mine. I know them well, and I know that their stories will be accurate and fair." "They're reporters, David. That's what they do." David ignored my little dig and finally chose a seat. No other seat would do for him except the one next to me. He got himself settled and began to talk practically nonstop. "Look, Rena, I know that you'd rather not do this trip and seminar, but you don't have another choice. Just relax, and it won't be as bad as you're expecting. You might actually have fun." "Must you sit next to me?" I asked. "I was hoping to be alone." "Well, that's too bad. You're stuck with me. I want to talk to you." "About what?" "I don't even like you, David." "Be that as it may, Janet asked me to work with you." "Why would she do something like that?" "She told me that you have a wonderful future ahead of you at the plant, but she's worried that it won't happen because you're very sheltered. "Okay, now I get it. You two have been discussing me behind my back." I punched the armrest next to me for emphasis. "Only as it applied to your job, Rena. Don't get paranoid." "I didn't ask her to. You know, I'm sick and tired of your smug attitude. You think you're better than everyone and that you're holier than thou, but you're not," he said loudly. Our co-workers made barking sounds and egged David on. "Get as sick of it as you want because I'm not leaving this seat. I was here first. You can have your pick of any seat on the bus, but no, you had to sit right next to me and bug me." "I might be doing that, but I'm trying to help you. You should be grateful that Janet values you so highly because she could very easily hire someone else for the job. Someone who's worldly and has some knowledge about cultural diversity." "That sounds like a veiled threat," David said. It's not for once, Rena. Let someone help you. Stop fighting me so much. Do I have a choice? You do not. You win, David, but leave me alone. Don't say anything to me for the rest of the trip. I won't promise you that, but I will bother you less. Deal, deal. The bus ride was long and uncomfortable. The way my co-workers acted on the trip, though, it was as if they'd never been anywhere before in their lives. Finally, they began to fall asleep. In several hours, I saw the famous New York skyline. I was mesmerized by the sea of tall buildings. It was like something from a storybook. As soon as we arrived, David got us settled into an African-American-owned bed and breakfast. I thought we were going to stay in a fancy hotel in Manhattan, but he had other plans for us. The bed and breakfast was located in Brooklyn in an old Victorian home. It had been restored to its original splendor. Each room was decorated separately. I was disappointed that we weren't staying in a real hotel, but I have to admit that the home was cozy and absolutely beautiful. The next 2 days were filled with an array of multicultural activities. Most of us answered the many exercises we did in the classes based on the stereotypes we'd been fed. I couldn't understand how I had such deep-seated racism lurking inside of me. I would have thought that having the guys around working helped me to understand more about their cultures, but it didn't. Now I saw what Janet and Dave meant when they said that I was sheltered and limited. I didn't like that side of myself at all. I vowed to do whatever I had to in order to change. The first step in my plan to become more culturally aware was to talk to David. I asked him to meet me in the parlor after we arrived home for the evening. "Yes, Rena, what can I do for you?" "Tea?" I asked. "And biscuits?" "Sure, with milk and no sugar, please." I handed him a cup of tea and some biscuits. "This is hard for me, David. I'm sorry for the way I've treated you. You were right. I was wrong." "Gee, this is a change," he mumbled, not making it easier for me. "I've been very unfair to you, and I'm trying to concede here and say I'm sorry. Work with me." "I accept your apology, Rena. But I had to see you sweat a little bit, at least." "Touché. Can we be friends from here on out?" "Yes, we can, David. And I even want you to help me learn about different cultures." "My offer still stands, and I would be glad to help you." "Good. These classes and lectures helped me to understand just how limited I really am. I'll never get ahead at the company if I don't make some changes." "Change is good, Rena. Don't fight it. I'll try not to." It felt good not fighting David. I needed him on my side. The second day of our trip, David called a quick meeting in the parlor. "I just want to make sure that everything is absolutely clear," he began. "This is what you all must do. First of all, you will work alone. Anyone who asks any of our group members for help will be disqualified. You will have all day to find 15 items that are indigenous to the African American, Latino, Asian, and Caribbean cultures. The items are easy to find. I'm passing around Brooklyn maps to each of you. The Flatbush streets have been highlighted to make that area easier to locate." The pulsing knot in my stomach demanded more. I was like a volcano on the verge of erupting. "What are the items that we have to find?" I cut in. "The African products are shea butter and black soap. The African American items are any type of greens such as kale, collards, mustards, or turnips, a bottle of bluing, and any dream book. The Korea products are a jar of kamichi, tiger balm, and a vial of ginseng. The Caribbean products are scotch, bonnet peppers, a bottle of fruit cola, a sample of mabi bark, a piece of salt fish, and one can of kalahu. The Puerto Rican items are one can of granules, one bottle of adobo seasoning. What are these things? I complained. I never heard of them. That's what makes this so much fun. You'll have to find out what they are and what they're used for. Where do you find them? If I told you that, I'd be giving it away. The only hint I'll give you is to find out where these groups live and visit places in those areas. David handed out assignment sheets. One more thing, Harriet and Lloyd will be shadowing you all in order to check out what you're doing and to make sure that no one tries to cheat. Unfortunately, you won't know where they are at any given time. Anyone caught cheating will be disqualified. Well, that's pretty sneaky, I chided. Sneaky but necessary, David said. We had to institute some kind of system to keep things fair. I cut him an annoyed look, but I didn't know why. We'll meet back here at 7 sharp to board the bus to go to the South Sea Seaport. There we'll board a party boat for an evening of dinner, entertainment, and dancing. We'll look at everyone's results and announce the winner. Good luck to each of you.
And where will you be all day while you're trying to round up the things on the list? I probed. Around Rena, that's all you need to know. David dismissed us and advised us to begin our search. I was shocked by what I saw. All types of stores dotted both sides of the streets, but there were just as many vendors stationed on the sidewalk hawking their wares. "Lady, come here," a voice called out. I looked around to see where the voice was coming from. "I got what you need." A tall man dressed in African garb with his hair twisted in braids was calling me over to his table. I went over to him and scanned his merchandise. "What is all this stuff?" I asked him. "These are various products from West Africa. There's incense, essential oils, teas, black soap." "Black soap, you said?" "Yes, lady, black soap is good for your skin." "How much?" "For you, I make a special price, $10 a bar." "That sure seems rather expensive. What's so special about black soap?" "It's imported all the way from Ghana, West Africa." "Okay, I believe you. I'll take it." "Good. You look like a lady who knows how to shop." "But you don't have any straw bags." "Oh, yes, I do," he said, and smiled brightly. He reached under his covered table. "Here, how much is this bag?" "The bag is $15. "I don't think that I really need a bag. I thought about having to come back with 15 items, and I remembered that some of them were cans. Maybe I did need a bag. On second thought, I'd better take that bag. 15, right?" "Oh, no, I meant 20, he said. "But you said 15. "Well, it's 20 now." "Why so much?" "Tax, lady." "Highway robbery, you mean." I handed him $30, and he reached in a beautifully carved wooden box and put the money in. He didn't answer my smart remark. "Would you happen to have shea butter?" "No, I don't. I just sold the last one." "Where can I find some?" "Try the markets along the avenue." "Thanks." He didn't say anything, just gave me a strange look. I looked at my map as I walked. I didn't know where to go, so I just walked. I stopped at another sidewalk vendor. "How may I be of assistance?" a female merchant dressed to the
Nines in colorful African clothing asked. Yes, you may. I'm looking for shea butter. In what form do you want it? I don't really know. Okay, I'll give you a tube then, she said, reaching into a basket filled with cosmetic products. How much? I don't set prices, ma'am. I practice the old African custom of haggling. Haggling, what's that? Haggling is the negotiating. I haggled for my tube of shea butter and wound up paying $5 for it. She said it was a common practice with many street vendors that they practiced with tourists. It's been nice doing business with you, ma'am. Be sure to rub that shea butter on your face tonight. It'll make your skin soft. Come back again, okay? I decided to venture into a large produce market located right on the corner of Newkirk Avenue. It was a family-owned market. Their three children picked vegetables, arranged shelves, and poured ice and water on the products to keep it fresh. Ma'am, I need your help, I asked. No speak English, she spat. It was clear that I wouldn't get any help from her, so I went down each aisle and tried to identify some of the names on the list. I ignored her and took several more trips around. I studied fruits and vegetables and various meats in large white buckets. A large box-shaped woman with two cute little girls in tow came up to me. You look confused, miss. May Queenie help? I need to find some things. I handed her the list and she studied it very carefully. Not to worry, this is pretty easy. She grabbed a basket. Come, I'm from Jamaica. Oh, really? Yes, I am. In here to buy some things for dinner tonight. I'll be buying many of the same things as you. I'm from the Midwest, I said. I'm trying to learn about different cultures. Queenie took me around the store like an expert tour guide. It turned out that rice and peas were a traditional Jamaican dish. While Queenie described Jamaican's food, she also led me to a can of callaloo, which looked like spinach. Come on, let's go get the saltfish. Queenie reached into a bucket and pulled out a large piece of dried fish. I stared at it. It looked awful. You eat that? Yeah, girl, it's good. Good. But it's dry and salted all over. You have to soak it in water. Then you cook it. How do you cook such a thing? We cook it with ackees, our national fruit. It's so tasty. Then she led me to the refrigerated shelves, where she pulled out fruit colas and pictures of palm trees. It was wonderful. The security woman, who was still following me, rolled her eyes at us and mumbled what sounded like a racial epithet. She thought we didn't hear her, but I heard every foul word from her lips. We ignored her. Pass me the mobby bark in the bag behind you, Queenie told the cashier. He gave it to her and she gave it to me. This stuff tastes like eating dirty metal, but it's wonderful. Well, I'm impressed. I'm getting my list down. See, I told you. Don't worry. You can get your greens, the dream book, and blueing from a market on Atlantic Avenue. Ask for Jamie and tell them Queenie sent you. Queenie nudged me in my side. He's my honey. My Janiel's a good man, and he'll be glad to give you any help. I thanked Queenie and paid for my purchases. How are you making out, Rena? Harriet stopped me in my tracks. I showed her the contents and let her peek inside. I'm making out as well as I can. I'm glad you're amused. We knew that you would like this scavenger hunt once you got into it. Do you need anything? No, just to get going.
Don't let me keep you. Perhaps I'll run into you later, Rena. Good luck. I had to take a train to Atlantic Avenue. How are you coming along with this, Rena? Okay, I guess. How about you? Oh, she ran into Sharon, it said. Okay. I have only found 4 things. May I see the inside of your bag? Not on your life. Are you trying to get me disqualified? No, I just want to see what's in, what it is I'm after. No way. I should have known that you wouldn't help me, Rena. Goodbye, Sharon. I walked away from her because she was nothing but trouble. I was taken aback by Atlantic Avenue because it was wide and noisy. I walked over 2 blocks and found the store Queenie had directed me to find. A group of older men sat on milk crates. The music coming from inside the store made the large speaker outside the store vibrate. I went inside and asked for Jamil. I'm the one and only, a well-built man, sporting a perfect set of teeth, announced and laughed. What can I do for you? Queenie sent me. If my Queenie sent you, I'll personally take care of you. Thanks, I'm looking for greens, a bottle of bluing, and a dream book. Jamil was cheerful and got all the things I was looking for. Well, a dream book explains what your dreams mean and gives them each a number, he chuckled. Then you take that number and you play it in the lottery. Oh, that sounds interesting. It is. Let me show you. I dreamt about my dead grandmother. She was tending some snakes and some of her teeth fell out. My gosh, I don't like that dream at all. Why not? When you dream about snakes, that means that you have enemies. By all means, I'll play those in the lottery. Straight or box? Straight or box? Either one. It doesn't matter. Play the box so that you'll hit any way it plays. He went to a special machine. Jamil handed the bluing and the vegetables to me, and I examined them. I'd eaten collard greens when Paul and Philip prepared a soul food dinner for us, but I never seen the other greens before. When he mentioned something about pot liquor, though, I had to stop him and ask what it was. That's the juice left over after the greens are cooked. We feed it to our kids, and the adults sop it up with cornbread. I was mesmerized by Jamil's recipe for cooking greens. Jamil rang up the purchases, and I paid him. Look here, honey, why don't you stay for lunch? He asked. I have a restaurant on the other side of this building. Okay, it's about time that I take a lunch break. I'm hungry. We went over to the other side, and sure enough, there was a tiny restaurant with 7 tables. Jamil turned on a dusty jukebox sitting in the corner. Jamil sang along with the record. I listened to some wonderful blues songs by many artists. He gave me a tall glass of sweetened iced tea while I was waiting. From what I gathered from his conversations with the people, they were regulars. Wow, I said, almost speechless. This looks terrific. But how am I going to eat all of this? Just take it slowly. It took me well over an hour, but I finished every morsel of food. I'd never eaten anything so tasty. He explained that the fish fry was a traditional event on Fridays. He also helped me with the other items. I walked a block over and walked along Fulton Street until I found the address he'd given me. I was amazed when I went inside of the store because it contained many traditional Korean products, such as food from their native costumes, and various products. I need some tiger balm, a jar of kimchi, and a vial of ginseng, I said, feeling sorry that I interrupted the meal. Do you have any of them? Oh, yes. He said non-Korean Americans don't usually ask for those types of things.
No, not at all. We're beginning to get some African-American customers who buy Tiger Balm. He opened up the jar of the balm and told me to smell it. What is this? Kimchi? I asked, pointing to the word on my list. That's our national dish. I smelled the kimchi and decided that it smelled like funky gym shoes, but I ate it and was surprised that I liked it. Don't worry about the smell, he admonished. That comes from the garlic and fermentation process. What is the ginseng used for? That's an easy one. We pour the vial in juice or tea and it gives us energy. I paid for my purchases and left the store. I thanked Mr. Kim. I looked at my map and saw that some of the words were in English and Spanish in several places. On the way, I saw a crowd gathering around a man who sounded as if he was arguing at someone. He was very animated. All I know was that whatever he was selling was moving like proverbial wildfire. I saw people holding three small white packs or something for which they paid $2 to get. I asked several people standing close to me what was in the little packs. Some of them wouldn't tell me. Others indicated they didn't understand or speak English. I sauntered over to DeKalb Avenue, a major Latino shopping area, and hit pay dirt. It was in the right area because I heard Spanish music. I noticed there were mirrors all around, and the cashier sat behind what looked like a bulletproof plastic window. There was an opening in the glass partition large enough to pass the money and bagged groceries through. You're new around here, the cashier asked. No, just passing through. Oh, he said, making some arroz con granulos tonight? Huh? Some what? Rice and beans. Oh, no, it's for, I began to say, but stopped. Maybe I will make some. I didn't feel like explaining. I'm sorry, sir, but can you tell me what this is for? Holding up the bottle and attempting to change the subject. Sure, everybody knows it's used for cleaning your house. Great, maybe I'll use it for mopping. There you go. Again, I paid and left. I began my trip back to the bed and breakfast. Despite all my arguments of opposition and bellyaching, I had received an education that no book could match. How was everyone's day? David asked. There was a lot of mumbling and rumblings on the bus. The driver took us on a scenic route through some areas in Brooklyn and Manhattan. Before we knew it, we were at South Street Seaport. A photographer cornered us as we were boarding the ship. As we all know, tonight is the final night of this year's training seminars. Lloyd and Harriet indicated that we did well because they gave a thumbs up sign and said they had enough material for a great story. David called out the items one by one. Who found tempo? David asked. I did, I screamed, nobly waving my find in the air. No one else found tempo. I learned that I was the only one when I didn't see any more hands raised. Can you tell us what it is and what it's for? Yes, I can. It's a powder used by exterminators to kill roaches. Give Rena a hand, everyone, David said. He also asked me to tell my coworkers how I'd found everything. I told them. Afterwards, David announced that I was the first place winner, while Sharon came in second. Have fun, ladies. You've earned it, David stated, giving us each a congratulatory kiss. David hugged me and gave me a canvas bag filled with traveler's checks, tanning lotion, sunscreen, sunglasses, all sorts of gift certificates for a shopping spree, and other goodies. I am most proud of Rena, David announced to the crowd. She didn't even want to do the hunt, and when she thought about it, she put everything she had into it. We ate a seafood dinner, saw a show, and danced a little. On the way back, David came over to talk to me. When we get back, I will be reporting your progress to Janet, Rena, David claimed. You've come a long way in a very short time. David went back to his seat, and I was so excited that I extended an invitation to my co-workers and the two reporters. I'd like you all to come back to my room. I'll cook a pot of greens. Greens? Sharon asked. Yes, greens. Jamil, a new friend, gave me a recipe. David asked the bus driver to stop at all night stores so I could get the spices. That night made our group closer. Sharon and I are friends now, and I've found that she wasn't the yes woman I thought she was. She was just as strong-willed as I was, and we'd often butted heads because neither of us would give an inch. The best thing to come out of the scavenger hunt was that our group has come together on one accord, and we now call ourselves friends. Once a month, they come to my farmhouse to share a potluck supper. The only requirement is that each dish must represent a culture other than that of the cook. Each person must explain the dish and talk about the culture it comes from. David and Janet have taken me under their wing. Janet has begun to let me make short trips to cities near our company's offices. The more I've learned, the more latitude they gave me. The plant even paid me to work on getting my nutrition degree. I absolutely loved going to work because I was finally doing the job I was meant to do. Every day was exciting, and I was given the type of duties I deserved. Just recently, Janet and David made me an offer I couldn't refuse. They asked me to teach classes on cultural diversity at various intervals through the year for the other employee teams. I'm now responsible for putting together scavenger hunts similar to the ones our group did, ethnic dinners and potlucks, picnics and trips to cultural institutions. It's my job not just to teach those classes, but to find creative ways to keep them interesting. That's one challenge I am up to. In life, it's hard to know or understand where lessons will come from. Mine came in a roundabout way when I least expected it. I wouldn't really say that I was a prejudiced person, but I was ignorant about people of color. Once I went into their neighborhoods and spoke with them, brought their products and ate with them, I saw them differently. They became real, live, breathing people with hope and dreams like the rest of us. The main lesson I learned was to appreciate people for who and what they are and to accept them as such. I am so open-minded about multicultural diversity that who's to say that I wouldn't get involved in a relationship with a man or another, or a man of another culture or race. Now that the barriers have been broken, anything may happen.
Okay, that is the end of that story. I hope you enjoyed it. It was very different. And if you tuned in late, this is Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds with the Romance Show. And I do have some time left, so I'm going to read a couple of poems. This first one is from True Confessions magazine. It was written by Lee C. Zimmer, and it's called Togetherness. If we survive a marital storm or two, and you grow fonder of me and me of you, if we share the same thought when we watch TV, and I smile at you, and you smile back at me, when we make mistakes and we both make amends, then as we grow older, sweetheart, we will be best of friends. Okay, this next poem is also from True Confessions magazine. It was written by P.R. Chico, and it's called Dove's Mountain. Here's the poem. We made it up to Dove's Mountain once, so many years ago. until we fell on broken dreams and sadness down below. We wept and cursed our days away, many wasted in despair, always longing to once again breathe the mountain air, so clean, fresh, and filled with hope. We were so high above everyone else on pious wings, unable to bend until that day when we both fell, never wishing for us to end. So beautiful was she when we lost our love, and to each other, our most precious friend. We left Dove's Mountain high above, never to climb it again. Okay, I still have some time left, so I can read one more poem. This is also from True Confessions magazine, and it was written by Jim Pasco. It's called Unspoken Thoughts of You. Here's the poem. On the really bad days, you're always on my mind. Even on the good ones, I think of you half the time. The daydreams are not derisive, though intimate in text, of a kiss and closeness and the love that may come next. It's a trail that is so confounding, on emotional terrain so rough. Where I now stand on this path is a place of not enough. Walking the untraveled ground results in a duality, fear of the unknown. With the excitement of what could be, I don't know what is the wisest or the most prudent thing to do. My thoughts just move in circles that end up back with you. And one more poem. This is from True Love magazine. It was written by Beth Baylor, and it's called A Non-Cook Marries. Here is the poem, my last poem of the show. When I got engaged, I should have registered at the A&P. Well-wishers could have given me paper plates or a year's supply of napkins. They could even have gifted me coupons instead of assorted plastic forks, knives, and spoons. Certainly, instead of the fancy china place settings, brand and design, I guess we picked out ourselves. I thought I had received 8 place settings and was finally going to use them when I saw we only have 7 settings, and I don't remember throwing even a single dish at you. I do have silverware for 8, but where do I put it? And casserole plates. Remind me, what are casseroles? At least we have 2 crystal glasses left, so I can toast being alone with you. So grateful for microwavable dinners and a good non-cook book. Okay, well, that was an unusual poem. But that is going to do it for this edition of the Romance Program. As always, thank you so much for listening. I enjoyed reading to you. This has been Volunteer Genios for Sun Sounds. Have a great week and take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.